This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we take a look at new digital banking apps and payment startups, storing data for longer than the human race will probably survive, and have we finally heard the death knell for Flash? That's all next on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast for Wednesday, February 17th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
My name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, the cold hopefully has come and more or less gone, at least the severe cold.
It was chilly.
It was absolutely nuts. And then, of course, around town here, we had the perfect storm of a rapid warm-up, which meant the poor city plows didn't get out in time to all the side streets. And a lot of people got stuck, so there was a lot of complaining on social media and all that stuff. But the good thing is there was no shortage of tech stories this week.
Yeah, it was busy. I mean, like, we just recorded last Friday, and apologies to our listeners for the late episode. We're just trying to make schedules work, and I was out of the office Tuesday and Wednesday, and then I think you were busy Thursday, Stuart. So yeah, but then it worked out because then we got Susan on the podcast, who was a fantastic guest. But even since like last Thursday, there's a lot of stuff going on, so we have a lot of stuff to get through here in hopefully a reasonable amount of time.
Exactly. So we're gonna start right away. Our first set of stories is a whole bunch of new Canadian digital only banks opening, Derek.
Yeah. So the thing about Canada is that you have to really be tied to an existing bank. So all of these companies are, or all these apps really, they are tied to an existing bank. One that started out in January is called EQ Bank, and they are the digital arm of Equitable Bank.
Okay.
And basically, you've seen those a lot in the States, and you're starting to see it more here, is you're seeing a full-service digital banking solution all within an app. If you want to send money, transfer money, some of these places offer investment vehicles as well, like GICs or a TFSA or an RSP even. You do still need to fill out typically a paper KYC form, which stands for Know Your Customer,
right.
Especially if you're going to invest something, because they need to ensure your risk tolerance. And this is a legal thing. They need to ensure your risk tolerance matches the investments you say you want to put your money in. But regardless, if you are one of these people who is tired of paying bank fees, or really, if you haven't been to a bank branch in the last 2 or 3 years, why are you paying one of the big five or the big six banks, BMO, RBC, BMO, or Scotiabank, yep. BMO, RBC, TD, National Bank, CIBC, anybody? Why are you paying them a monthly fee? I need to go to a branch still sometimes, so that's my problem. But if you don't need to, Equitable Bank is part of the Canada Deposit Insurance Corporation, so you have your deposits protected up to $100,000.
Yep. And that's the same as any other big bank, we should add.
Correct. And and so EQ Bank launched their app last month. Seems fairly full-featured. They don't offer checks, money orders, or, of course, the retail banking experience.
Or a debit card.
Or debit card right now, yeah.
So hopefully
whereas Tangerine does. Yeah, whereas Tangerine does. Now, Tangerine's not purely digital. They do have a few what they call cafes in some of the larger cities like Toronto, Ottawa, I think Montreal. Mm-hmm. But you can get a debit card. You can get checks. The online banking experience is pretty good. The mobile app could use some work, because Tangerine's mobile app is just a web wrapper.
Okay.
So it's really just web pages pretending to be an app. But anyway, moving on to the new guys. So that's EQ, and then there's Zag Bank, which is kind of a funny name.
It is.
Based in Calgary, and it's owned by Desjardins.
Yep, Desjardins.
And and so they offer as well a high-interest savings account, TFSAs, RSPs, GICs. I'm trying to remember right now whether they have a debit card.
don't know if it does. Doesn't look like they do, or it doesn't say in the article we were
looking at. Yeah, it doesn't say.
It's something we can look up, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, if you're in the market and you're really tired of the old standbys, the point is we're actually starting to get some competition here. You know, free checking accounts. You know, so never have to see a person if you're agoraphobic or you just don't use that experience. So definitely two apps and backing companies or banks to check out: Zag Bank and EQ Bank, iOS and Android apps for both.
Right. And I think what's nice about these sort of banks, and you mentioned Tangerine, is that, yeah, if you have some savings, but maybe it's you don't want to invest it in the stock market, or you're just, you know, you need to get to it potentially quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you can, you know, you, again, this is a good interest rate, 2.5%. You throw that in the savings account.
Yeah. That's...
And just leave it. So that's kind of the idea, too. I've seen both of them and Tangerine. They're really kind of encouraging people to save and stuff like that. And
yeah.
There is a lot of no fee options. Like I have a President's Choice card.
Right.
Bank account. It's no fee. Now, I still have one. I actually have one with our local credit union, Libro, for the business account,
right.
Just because I'd rather support a local thing. And, you know, that's something that's not offered here yet, but it's certainly something I think we're going to see more of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. CleverHost uses Tangerine for its banking. So I'm certainly familiar with that. But like I said, I do actually have a debit card for that, so I can just go out and buy stuff. You know, Zag and EQ aren't quite there yet, but they have to start somewhere. They're out in the marketplace now. 2.5% interest rate is fantastic. What you usually get from the big banks right now is like 0.25, maybe 0.5 if you have like more than $5,000 in your savings account or something like that.
You know what they actually call that interest rate out in Newfoundland? They actually call that being slapped in the head with a cod. Just saying.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
I'm paying
you $15 a month, and you're only giving me 0.5%, if that, on my savings.
Exactly. What are we doing wrong there? Exactly.
Yep.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned when you go out to buy stuff, because that's an excellent segue into our next story.
A little bit, yeah.
So you like what I did there?
I do. So Pebble, which was started by a University of Waterloo grad.
But we won't hold that against them.
No, we won't. Should have gone to Western. Anyway, they have a new smart strap that will let you pay for stuff with you because it has an NFC chip inside.
Yep.
So this is really cool. I'm really glad to see that this is coming. It's neat to see them expand the functionality in this way instead of expecting users or, you know, customers to buy a whole new watch.
Right.
Which, of course, is exactly what other people do. Apple. And
sorry, what was that?
You heard it. So, so what they're doing right now is... So they've got a company called Pagare that they're partnering with. And they're on Kickstarter right now. They've got a Kickstarter campaign going. Should have about 20 days to go still. They want to make Pebble compatible straps that have NFC built in. We don't know right now whether it'll support Canadian credit and debit cards. The banks are famously resistant to doing anything outside of the Interact Flash set of features. But really, there's no reason why we can't. It's just a matter of, or why Pagare and Pebble can't make that happen. It's just really a matter of making those deals. In the meantime, they do expect that they'll have integration that they'll have a similar global footprint as Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, and Android Pay. That doesn't really say much for launch, at least here in Canada. But again, the technology is there. We're actually way ahead of the U.S. in terms of accepting tap to pay. The little gas station in Kilworth actually has tap to pay now.
That's cool.
So, I mean, when small places like that are starting to get tap to pay, for me, like, we're hitting that long tail now, and that long tail is starting to get it. So it'd be great to see this come to fruition. So if you're interested, hit the link in the show notes, get over to the Kickstarter page and hand them a few bucks to make sure this happens, or maybe pre-order, quote-unquote, one through the...
Kickstarter.
Through the Kickstarter campaign, yes, sorry.
Yep. And Samsung's kind of doing something similar, but they're kind of doing it a little bit differently.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So yeah. Now I'm actually really concerned that this isn't. So, okay, I'm going to back up. Apple figured out, or some Apple Watch owners figured out that if you're not Caucasian, or if you don't have light skin, so if you're not Caucasian or Asian, I guess, the heart rate sensor doesn't work.
Right.
Because they're trying to shine a light through your skin in order to see the blood flowing through your veins and get your heart rate that way. Unfortunately, if you're black or maybe even a dark Hispanic person, that doesn't work.
No.
So I really hope Samsung heard about this and went, oh, geez, we really need to make sure this is tested on non-white people. But yeah, they want to do authentication via your veins.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's veins are obviously a little bit different.
They must be laid out
a little bit different. So obviously they feel like they can do some sort of authentication with your veins around your wrist and then enable. Oh, okay. No, sorry. There's a little like camera type thing on the side of the watch that would actually look at the veins in your hand. So around around the bones that actually eventually turn into fingers.
Right.
And authenticate you that way, and then let you pay for your stuff with this.
It's an interesting concept. Like, again, it'll be interesting to see. And my big thing is, like anything else, it can be hacked. But at least with this one, unlike an eyeball sensor, you know, if someone wants to rob you, you know, they can't exactly just cut off your wrist and hope that works.
Well, they could, but that's
yeah, but it's not going to work.
That takes a while. What I'm more concerned about is if you're like, you know, if you're on a big weight loss thing, or vice versa, you have some sort of thing that causes you to gain a lot of weight. It's going to be a lot harder to verify, you know, that. Well, I guess if you lose weight, it'll just get a better view of your veins.
Yeah.
But how often does your veins change? Yeah. So if you put on some weight, or your hand gets mangled in an accident or something, like how hard is it going to be to re-authenticate this thing on the other wrist, or to say, no, it's really me. I put on 10 pounds over Christmas or whatever, because really thin people typically you can see their veins a lot clearer.
Yeah,
not that that's
exactly
a fault.
So yeah, it'll reality. Be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see where they go with this. It's just, yeah, I don't know who thinks of this stuff, but obviously people with different mindset than me.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's cool. I just don't know how well it'll work.
Exactly. Okay.
On the other hand,
moving on to something that's going to make a lot of web designers and a lot of security folks like me very, very happy.
This is something that will definitely work. So I was saying, on the other hand, this is something fantastic. This is like go to church and say hallelujah type amazingness. Google has announced that effective June 30th, 2016, DoubleClick, which is an advertising network they bought a long time ago, and AdWords are going to stop accepting flash banner advertisements.
Yay!
Can I get an amen?
Amen. If I can later on, I'll see if I can insert a crowd applause in the final podcast.
Sure. Oh, I could do that right now. Hang on. I got that.
He's got that, folks.
See, I can't hear it.
No, but it's there. I can't hear it, so that's fine. It's in my mind.
Yes. Hallelujah. No more flash banners through DoubleClick and AdWords, which really have to control half of the market.
Yeah. So it's making anyone go to HTML5, basically.
Yes. Yeah, which is going to be great. So, and I mean, like, I've seen some really nice animated HTML5.
Oh yeah.
Ads, and or even video wrapped in HTML5 wrappers. So like, it's doable. It's just people have been lazy and they really didn't have a reason to move over to it. But now the big boy, the big gorilla in this market, is saying no more flash on starting June 30th. So hopefully we start to see a drop off before that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the thing about Flash, too, is it sucked batteries down, used up more bandwidth. HDMI 5 is like really designed for a mobile experience. It can deliver all, you know, optimum downloads. So, you know, you're not using as much on your data plan, et cetera. So, yeah, this is nothing but good news. Now, again, like everything else, technology comes and goes. Flash became popular in the early 2000s. And at its peak, some people say 90% of all media-rich advertising was underpinned by Flash. So I know. But yeah, some of us who were in the know, we went, this is ugly.
Yeah. So what they're saying is you can't upload it anymore after June 30th. And then January 2nd, 2017, so we still got almost another year to wait, the Google Display Network and AdClick will no longer display those ads. So I guess if you really want one to run for about 6 months, 7 months, between this June and next January, you can still get one up there. But
if you want,
the end is nigh.
I will like you, though. You know, that's
the end is nigh, and that's what's important.
Exactly. Okay, now this next one is something that's, I've kind of surprised they haven't done this before, but Amazon's actually doing an AWS region, going to be doing it in Montreal the next coming year or so. The reason I say this is because there's a lot of people, and even though I kind of, you know, there's a story here, but a lot of people can't, they say they can't take their data or store their data outside of the country. Now, never mind the fact that, you know, the way the nature of the internet is, you're basically could be going through a router in Buffalo where it hits the U.S. anyway, but for data storage.
Yeah, but the final resting place, right?
Final resting place.
Should be here. And there are some compliance things like PIPEDA, which is the, it regulates electronic health data.
Right.
Yes, that has to stay in the country. You know, yes, it might pass through Detroit or Buffalo in this region, or even, you know, Seattle if you're out west or something like that on its way too. But yes, it does actually need to be stored in the country. And so, you know, that's a big inhibitor right now for Amazon, is they can't go after that market at all, or pretty much any government contracts here in Canada, because, you know, whether it's a perception thing or an actual legal thing, people would just prefer to have their data stay in the country.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them.
So this is going to be a really good thing for, you know, not only companies, but people doing apps, people doing backup services, for example, that, you know, they want their data stored in Canada, things like that. And I also noticed, you know, Amazon's, you know, because there's a lot of stuff that runs off Amazon's infrastructure. For example, Netflix.
Yeah.
People don't know that. But they're opening new data centers. They're going to be opening in the UK and in India.
Yeah.
Those are going to be all new regions, too. So,
and Ohio.
Yeah. Ohio,
sweet.
Another one.
Can't wait.
In addition to Northern Virginia. So, yeah, they've got them pretty well worldwide now. Another one in China as well coming soon.
Yeah, that'll be the third or fourth one in China.
Yep, three.
Yeah, this comes on the heels of SoftLayer, a very large, who is a dedicated server and cloud provider with a very large global footprint. I worked with them at a past employer. They were bought by IBM a little over a year and a half ago, or maybe about 2 years ago now. Really, IBM just said, you just keep doing what you're doing, and if you want to use our data centers to put up more servers, that's cool. So that was great. And so about a year and a half ago, they put up a Toronto data center, and I think they were doing Montreal shortly after that. I'm pretty sure Montreal's up now or very soon, because I was just looking at them recently for a project here at Olio.
Right.
And Microsoft did announce last year that they would be putting up data centers in Toronto and I think Quebec City for Microsoft Azure. So Office 365 will be hosted out of both of those data centers. So if you are an Office 365 user and have been wary of the fact that your data is crossing the border and being stored there, you should have an option later this year to say, hey, Microsoft, can you move that to Toronto or to Quebec City? And now Amazon. So Canadian cloud computing is finally hitting its stride.
We're truly doing that. We're seeing more and more organizations moving more of their services to cloud. Yeah. You know, my previous employer, that's why I was only under a 2-year contract, because at that point there's not as much need for system administrators.
Yeah.
Because a lot of, but you know, ultimately it is better for the business. It lets them concentrate on what they do best and leave it up to Google.
Yeah.
To Google or Amazon or Microsoft to manage all these other services. So yeah, good for them. So yeah, we're going to be seeing more. Now, the slightly ugly side of cloud computing sometimes. See, don't you love the way I can just go from story to story?
Yeah, you are quite skilled.
It's pretty good. So Adobe, Creative Cloud for Mac, that's Adobe's flagship product where you have Photoshop and InDesign and all the stuff that your designer guys use. And it's similar to Office Online, where you get the latest version and it continually updates and stuff like that. The only problem is sometimes with that, you got to still make sure you have backups, because they did an update recently for the Mac, for Creative Cloud. And apparently it was, once you installed it, it would, accidentally, I guess, true. But it would definitely delete the very first file or directory in your folder directory. So if you had a directory beginning with .dot or something like that, it would delete it out of the blue. So
yeah.
So this affected a few people, and people like from Backblaze and Carbonite, they noticed it kind of first, because their users were saying, "I'm having to restore this stuff." So at least people were backing up. But it just goes to show that sometimes you want to make sure you have a backup, even the stuff that's supposedly safe in the cloud. Have another backup somewhere else. Now Adobe has halted it, and they've released a fix for it. But again, unless you've backup, and if you didn't, and then you did a secure erase, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I swear by CrashPlan. It saved me a few times. I'm about to, not that I want to, but it's tax time and I don't really have much of a choice. I'm about to blow away my elementary OS installation on my desktop and put Windows 7 probably back on. And I'll probably do the upgrade to Windows 10 after tax season.
Right.
Because I tried it before and Windows 10 is not ready for my computer.
Yeah, on the one I'm using here, it's a pretty kick-ass machine, but Dell has said they're not going to have drivers for it, so that's fine. Yeah. I wish then the damn pop-up wouldn't keep coming up, because it should know that I already checked and you're not going to run on me.
There's a way. There's ways.
That. It's the whack-a-mole thing. We talked about that before. So
yeah, so CrashPlan's great. Backblaze, Carbonite, these companies have been around for several years. They are profitable. You can rely on them. The nice thing is that there is a backup in the cloud. The nice thing I've always said about CrashPlan is that if you have another computer internally, or even a NAS, a network attached storage device internally, you can set that as a backup, as a secondary or even the primary backup destination as well. So instead of having to restore from the cloud, you can restore internally, from a local device, and that's much faster.
Right. Exactly.
Generally speaking.
Yeah, but you definitely want some sort of backup. As I say, the 3-2-1, three copies, two different locations, one of them offsite. If you follow that, And again, if you want more information about backups, go to my blog at sclarkconsulting.ca. I write about that stuff all the time, and I can definitely help you with that. Yeah. There's that little plug in there.
And then call Stuart and pay him a couple $100 to actually come search you out.
Well, might not even be a couple
might,
bucks.
Might not even be, yeah, it could be $50. I don't know what your rates are.
Exactly. It could be, some base stuff, but definitely look into it. I'd want you to be safe. Better safe than sorry. All right. Under being safe, or our supposed keeping us safe, Apple, the San Bernardino shooting, the couple there that had that terrible terrorist attack, whatever you want to call it. The FBI wants Apple to unlock the iPhone of one of the San Bernardino shooters. Well, Chief Executive Tim Cook, he put a letter out to everyone saying, we're not gonna do that. Because the way encryption works in that is once you put a backdoor in, it's vulnerable.
Yeah, and it's, well, so I was listening, I'm listening to Serial, the podcast, and not Serial like Kellogg's, Serial like Serial Murderer, S-E-R-I-A-L. Last year they did a story about Adnan Syed, who allegedly killed he was convicted of killing his girlfriend like 15 years ago.
Right.
And most recently they're doing a story, they're doing this season on, Bo Bergdahl, who was a U.S. soldier who, according to him, tried to initiate a army missing person type thing, type situation, by running off temporarily, he thought, and ended up getting caught by the Taliban and, you know, and then all the resulting 5 years of what happened after that. And in that story, they've been talking about how even the U.S. government as a whole doesn't know how they want to treat this type of situation. The CIA says, yes, we need backdoors into your encryption methods. The NSA says, no, that's a bad idea. I'm going to have to side with the NSA for once on this.
Write this date down, folks.
Yes, write this date down. Derek agreed with a
the NSA,
or I was going to say any privacy or security, government security organization.
Yes.
Because they're right. As soon as you open it up to the government or just to, you know, authorized personnel or whatever, that opens it up to everybody. It doesn't matter. IP addresses can be spoofed. MAC addresses can be spoofed. You know, like anything can be spoofed or socially engineered. And I've got a good story for that if we had time, but like a recent one. So it's a terrible idea. And I'm, as much as I don't own an iPhone anymore, and I'm really disappointed with the software on my iPad, I really appreciate the fact that Apple is taking a stand on situations like this. Microsoft has as well. Google has as well in various situations where they're saying, no, like we're not going to do this for you. We're not going to do effectively what the FBI could do themselves and brute force. The PIN on this, or the passcode on this phone.
Exactly.
You guys
can
do it yourself. You don't need Apple to try and do that. Yep. I mean, ultimately, you can. You might lock yourselves out, but that's your problem. Like, it's your evidence. You get to deal with it now. The whole point of encouraging users to put a passcode on their phone when you update the OS is this very reason. And so that is to prevent this sort of situation from happening. And so Google or Apple and Google can say, too bad, so sad, we cannot help you. Not that we don't want to, and they don't want to anyway, but we physically, literally cannot help you.
Exactly. I'm just going to finish this by the last paragraph, paragraph of Tim Cook's letter. While we believe the FBI's intentions are good, it would be wrong for the government to force us to build a backdoor into our products. And ultimately, we fear that this demand would undermine the very freedoms and liberties our government is meant to protect. So a good way to finish that story.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to ask a quick question and you don't have to answer it. But I'm starting to wonder, at what point do companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft and even Amazon, what point do they start to move what they consider their global headquarters away from the U.S. when stuff like this starts to happen? Or federal law in the U.S. does change and says,
well, we're already seeing that they're doing it for tax purposes. So,
well, yeah, I mean the whole double Dutch Irish sandwich thing or whatever the hell that's called. Like,
that's good. I like that. Careful, some investor will all of a sudden get a bright idea.
Yes,
investment banker.
Double Dutch Irish sandwich. That sounds like delicious.
We can sweet to do both.
I guess. So, this is getting way off topic. I'll wrap this up quick. The Ghost Foundation, which is doing an open source, I think it's open source, blogging platform called Ghost. They just moved from the UK, or they've decided to move from the UK to Singapore because of the new rules coming, new accounting rules coming into place to prevent the double Dutch Irish thing.
I like that. We're going to make that the show name.
Double Dutch Irish thing. Because this new accounting thing called VATMOS is just so onerous for small businesses.
Yeah.
And it's like the intentions are absolutely good. And I'm glad they've decided to, you know, to rewrite the tax code to make sure that Google and Apple and Amazon, et cetera, can't duck out of paying the taxes that they actually owe.
Yeah, exactly.
But on the other hand...
We could have a whole other episode.
And we will at some point. But on the whole security thing, like, At what point do you have to decide, you know what, screw it, I'm moving. Like, I'm moving my corporate headquarters to Canada so that laws like this have a much harder time of applying to me. Or, you know, Canada, Mexico, whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter. But, you know, right now it's Cupertino, Mountain View, you know, Seattle. Like, when is that going to happen? That's if it keeps going down this road, I have to think that it's going to happen at some point.
All right. Our next story, Toymaker Mattel, they're going to unveil. This is truly where 3D printing is becoming mainstream.
This is awesome.
They've unveiled a ThingMaker 3D printer. It's going to sell for $300 US, so about 3,000 Canadian, the way our dollar's going, and will be available this fall.
I want two. I want one. I don't want one. I want two.
One for the kids, one for yourself, right?
Yeah, one for my oldest and one for me, so I can print Lego all day.
There you go. Yeah.
I hope the resolution is good enough. I really don't know. I mean, like, we don't know much. It's being unveiled at the New York Toy Fair, which is a big annual thing. And I really want to see it in action because ultimately if I can print Lego or similar small fun things for, what is that, 400 US, 433, somewhere around there.
Something like that, yeah.
I'm laughing. Like, that's a lot of fun and or a lot of potential fun to have. And at a fairly affordable price when you consider how far.
And it'll be interesting to see how quick it'll get hacked.
Yeah,
you know, people will hack it.
Someone will root it real quick. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's cool with me.
That's what we hope. So they are going to be using Autodesk software to help with it. So some of their CAD stuff. Definitely from the one picture we've seen, looks like it's a lot of smaller things, but looks like these parts can go together. So yeah, I think that'll be cool as well. We have maker spaces in London, like the Unlab and stuff like that, and the Maker Bus, and a lot of people now know about 3D printers, and it's a very cool idea. So, yeah, I'm really hoping to hear more about this as it comes out. And who knows? There'll be a lot of people printing under the tree. Maybe they'll just print the tree at Christmas.
Amazon is already taking pre-orders. I don't know if that applies to Amazon Canada, but it certainly applies somewhere. So if you have like a mailbox in the States or what have you, then you could probably get it pre-ordered now and get it shipped there as soon as it's ready to drop.
As soon as it comes in, exactly. Okay, moving on, our last international story.
Yeah.
This is this is where I always say I've been in this game for many years, and there's always stuff that every year that makes me go, wow.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. This is from the University of Southampton, the Optoelectronics Research Center. They've been working on a 5D data storage using glass, crystal, whatever. So it's a little bit like, you know, Superman's crystals in the Fortress of Solitude.
Sounds good to me.
Well, that's what I've heard some people joking about. So this thing will hold 360 terabytes for disk, thermal stability up to 1,000 Celsius, virtually unlimited lifetime at room temperatures. Now, if you have somewhere that's 190 Celsius, you can store it for 13.8 billion years. I think that's getting close to the end of the universe, but anyway.
I was going to say, or until twice the length from when the sun is expected to explode.
Yeah. So we hope by then some of these are off planet by then, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm sure they will be.
But yeah, this is something pretty cool in terms of digital our archiving.
This is insane. Like 360 terabytes per disk. I imagine they mean, well, I'm not sure if they mean platter or disk, but regardless.
On the unit, yeah.
Yeah, as far as research goes, this completely eclipses the hard drive story we had just like a month ago about putting 8 terabytes and 10 terabytes into a 3.5-inch hard drive space.
Yeah. And it's also in 5 dimensions. It's read-only, so ideal for archiving. It's kind of cool because the picture shows they have the Universal Declaration of Human Rights on this little disk, but they've also got the UN logo. And, you know, so there's certainly something neat about that. Now, it'll be interesting to see, it's very much a work in progress, very early on. You can read the paper if you really want to geek out. It's definitely quite technical, but yeah, pretty amazing in terms of, you know, particularly long-term storage. Now, again, the usual rule applies. How do we make sure that this sort of thing can be read in a couple of million years or a couple of thousand years? Because I remember back to fans and some scientists, Gene Roddenberry had a lot of his old writings on a very old, I think it was a CPM computer or something like that, with very proprietary disks. And there was no disk yet that could read it. They managed to do that. But that's only like in less than 50 years. So we have to make sure the technology is there that we can still rewrite it. But the fact that it's, you know, that much, you know, unlike magnetic and stuff, this thing's permanent. So at least the ability to store, it's a heck of a lot better.
I mean, you could probably store like your entire life's memories on maybe two or three of these.
Yeah.
And literally just carry them around on a glass disk everywhere you go.
Well, you know, yeah, it's amazing. Now, you know, there is terabyte databases. There is even some petabyte databases. But if you consider just text and some images, like that's, you know, yeah, it's just amazing when you think what that can hold, the entire sum of human knowledge. And there's a joke there, but I won't go there. So
42.
Several, actually. There's actually, yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, this is kind of cool. So, We're gonna see what happens and with this, and keep an eye, and maybe it's something we'll see one day. Because yeah, there's a lot of stuff I store on hard drives that would be nice if I had a more permanent way of archiving them, instead of having to, over the years, you know, I had them on CD, then DVD, now I keep them on a couple of hard drives.
Yeah, just put all my movies on glass now.
There you go. Especially for Rito only. I think that could safely store your movie collection.
You know what? That might be, that might be a really good way to thwart piracy. But if you could still read from the disc, then not really. Never mind.
No.
Not that I'm like down with piracy, you know, type of person, but I was just, you know, for practical purposes.
Quick thought.
But no, it can't. Never mind.
Exactly. So, yeah. So there we go. All right. So what else do we have? We have our local links.
We do.
We have our good friends at iConnect, who recently moved into the old About Town offices, which were actually the old powerhouse for the London Street Railway. Beautiful office, if you've ever had a chance to see it. They're actually partnering with Lockheed Martin, yes, the aerospace maker that makes stealth planes, but they also have a technology division. And they're going to work with them to retrieve old medical records and make them accessible. This is good because, you know, apparently, there's roughly 4,000 hospitals around North America. There's about 50 different systems around there. Believe me, I know this. I've worked with some people who are familiar with this. So the idea of being able to get them all into one spot is actually a really good idea. They've actually worked with legal firms before for some similar things. So this is actually a really good concept, because the more information, because you know what it's like, your medical records and legal records, boxes and boxes and boxes of paper. And, you know, obviously finding ways to quickly find that information can be difficult. So this will be kind of cool. So, you know, the idea is when it's done, you know, your doctor, they don't have to search for, you know, 10 different systems to find an old blood test from 10 years ago or something. It's all in one spot. So this will be really good. They're saying multi-millions in the short term, tens of millions over the next couple of years. Again, another great sign that our tech sector is really making some noise now.
Sorry, I had to real quick. I mean, this is really impressive. Where I'd really like to see this is evidence lockers for police stations, especially in the U.S. Based on, you know, stuff I hear, but even here in Canada, obviously, because notoriously you hear about things going randomly missing or things conveniently, you know, not there, or like, oh yeah, we looked. Yep. It's not the computer. And meanwhile, you go back into the evidence room, or like a lawyer goes back into the evidence room, and ta-da, there it is. Oh, the magic box
that
I was looking for that could exonerate my client.
Exactly.
Something like this that would be ideally would be, you know, used by the evidence control folks to catalog what's there and check it out and check it back in and keep track of who has it and that sort of thing, because paper and pen is useless for that over the long term. But even like a little kiosk where your lawyer could just go and go, you know, type in a few things and ta-da, box is in, it's checked in, should be on shelf X, Y, please give it to me, and digitally sign it out, because Ontario law does recognize e-signatures as legally valid.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very much so.
And in addition to this, here in town, Tiny Titan Studios, which is not a company I'd heard of, my apologies, Tiny Titan, they made a couple of games last year, and Apple named their game Dash Quest one of the best new games last fall.
That's awesome. It recently
won an award for Apple's Best New Games Upgrade, and now it's been downloaded around 750,000 times. That's really good. I mean, anytime I see something close to a million or even over 500,000, because of the amount of software that is in Apple's App Store or Google Play's store, I won't say Microsoft Store because there's really not much there. It's really easy to stand out. But pretty much everywhere else, to get to a place where that many people find you and download you is impressive.
Yeah.
So congratulations. It's great to hear that the traffic is so high for a game made here in London. It goes nicely with the story about Big Blue Bubble and their mind-singing monsters hitting 10 million monthly active users, I believe it was, a few weeks ago. And it doesn't say they're growing, or that they're hiring right now, but it's just great to see things like this happen in London. So congrats to Tiny Titan.
Yep, definitely. So congratulations to both of them. We'll definitely give them a shout out when we put up the episode for this because we like supporting our local firms.
Yeah.
Okay, what we like this week. I didn't find anything that new myself, but I actually, and I'm actually listening and talking to you on it. I love my gaming headset. This is a Corsair Vengeance 2000 gaming headset. What I like about it is it's actually wireless. It's like a special Bluetooth dongle you put in, and there's a separate charging cable, but I can unplug the charging cable, and I can be up to 40 feet away from my computer, and the battery lasts for about 10 hours. And as we can hear, the sound quality is great. It's a great gaming headset. The basically, the little mic, I can swing it out of the way. I picked this up a couple of years ago. It's still available. I just double-checked. It's drivers for everything. And I just can't say a good thing enough good things about it. Awesome quality with it. They're very comfortable on the head. These ones have the sponge head pieces. I don't like the what I call the vinyl or the fake leather. I like the sponge ones because it's nice and comfortable.
Yeah.
It's just a great headset. Definitely worth looking at for podcasting. As you can hear, it works pretty well. I'm pretty impressed with it. Definitely one to check out. And again, I'll have a link to the product page in the show notes.
I am jealous of your sound quality.
There you go. I am jealous of your pick because I should have thought of this.
Oh, this is so nice. Okay, a company called I don't remember, but it's in the show notes. NASA went to a really cool design company run by two brothers. I did read about these guys. I just can't remember the name of the company. Invisible something. And asked them to, with some guidance, asked them to put together some space tourism posters. And wow, like the results are so cool. I want to put these up all over my house.
Yep.
I can't even pick a favorite. I mean, the one for Venus is really, really cool. It's funny.
I love the Grand Earth. Tour myself. The Grand Tour one's just awesome.
The Grand Tour is very nice as well. I'm looking down here. The one for Enceladus is really, really nice. Very retro, cool.
Well, they all are. Titan, Europa. Yeah, they're just amazing. Yeah.
Very, very well done. So, congratulations to the company that put these together. Thank you, NASA, for getting these done and sharing them for free in poster size that you can go get printed yourself. I guarantee you I'm gonna do just that. And I'm trying to get the boss here at Olio to approve getting these like printed on like 16 by 24 or 20 by 30. Standard poster size, and then getting them matted because I think these would look terrific around the office.
Oh, exactly. And the descriptions of these are great. You know, there's obviously some sci-fi fan here. Here's the one for Kepler-16b, where your shadow always has company, like Luke Skywalker's planet Tatooine in Star Wars. You know,
yes.
So they talks about it orbits a pair of stars.
Yeah.
So again, there's even some science and some learning built in. Don't tell the children.
or the one for Venus talks about how... So the rare science opportunity of planetary transits has long inspired bold voyages to exotic vantage points, journeys such as James Cook's trek to the South Pacific to watch Venus and Mercury cross the face of the sun in 1769. Neat. Mm-hmm. Very cool. So, yeah, definitely download these. Use them as your wallpaper. Get them printed. Heck, print them on your, you know, inkjet 8.5 by 11 printer. Just put them up in your space because they are colorful and very, very cool. That's my pick of the week.
Exactly. Two excellent choices. So we're just about done here. We just have a couple of things. We first have our sponsor. And again, our sponsor, Derek, is you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, it's CleverHost, which I mentioned earlier. We are a small, very focused web hosting company based here in the London area. We strive to ensure that our services are up all the time, always performing well, that they are easy to use and easy to navigate. We are on the cutting edge in terms of the control panel user interface, because we're really liking what cPanel, who actually make the software for that, are doing and where they're taking the user interface. And so instead of lagging on the same interface that's been available since like 1999, as soon as the newer version was available, we went to it right away. There was a few bugs, but it's been worth it because it is so much easier to use. So if you want
definitely.
A control panel that's easy to use and navigate, really good instructions, good support, and an affordable web hosting service that is up 99.99% of the time, go to cleverhost.ca, and you can use the promo code, I believe, was CTP10, and that'll get you 10% off your first invoice.
There you go. See, you can't go wrong with that.
No.
So, you know, definitely. And as I said, I use CleverHost as well. I recommend it to many of my clients. Just great service. And if you haven't figured that out already, Derek's really passionate about customer service. So definitely give them a try. And we thank you and them for your support. Okay, a couple of additional announcements. We've added the Canadian Tech Podcast to Google Play Music, haven't we, Derek?
Yes, we have. So I found out that they're actually accepting in larger numbers podcasts to the Google Play Music podcasts platform. I hope it's not that long of a name. It'll probably just be Google Play Music and then a podcast section. But regardless, we added Canadian Tech Podcast yesterday, and it's already been approved for publishing. So if you are one of the lucky folks who already have access to the consumer side of that, we are there. Feel free to find us. And, of course, secondly, we would really appreciate your help in helping grow our listenership. I hope that's a word. By letting your friends and followers on places like Twitter and Pinterest know when our new shows go up. And ideally, you could even tag a friend or two that you think might be interested when you post your status update or tweet or what have you, depending on the social network you're on. Just let your friends and family know that that you're listening, that you like us, and hopefully we'll continue to grow.
Exactly. So, all right. So another excellent show. We're hoping to have, we're hoping to have Jameson and some other guests back in the next upcoming weeks. We really enjoyed having Susan on last week. We got a lot of good response there.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. So we're definitely going to do that again. It's definitely more fun with three of us or four or five.
It is, especially
or
when
18.
You have – okay, no, you're pushing
maybe
it.
Not 18?
Not 18.
Can you fit 18 in your boardroom?
Not comfortably.
Okay, just checking. Let me just make a note of that. All right.
I mean, like, if you want to be on the show, let us know. Email contact@canadiantechpodcast.ca or send us a tweet or a Facebook message to either Stuart or myself. We are happy to host you at maybe at Stuart's house or here at the Olio Digital Labs office. and you know,
make or it even happen. Or even via three-way Skype call
or through Skype. Yes, we record this through Skype. I can easily do a three-way call through Skype and record it all. So that's
and if
not
and if you do it by Skype, it means you don't have to wear pants.
That's true.
It's audio only.
Or so shirt.
Well, yeah, exactly. We just want to make sure that's definitely audio only then.
Be comfy. So. Yeah, we're not going to start a video call. Be comfy. Wear whatever you want or whatever you don't want to.
Exactly. And just don't tell us.
Yes, absolutely. Don't
please.
Do
all right. So okay. For the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 60 for Wednesday, February the 17th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And I'm still Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.